Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Almost time to say Happy New Year. Just about time to say Happy New Year. Thanks for being us here.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. You're going to say it early? Chris Check says Happy New Year. Chris Check, Joe Heschmeyer here. As I said, my name is Cy Kellett, and we are the Flannel Panel. We wear flannel shirts and talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective.
May I say something about my flannel shirt? This is a debut. I'm debuting it.
This is your Ann shirt?
Nice. It's Ann Zedra. The great Ann Zedra sent this to me.
I wore my Ann Zedra last time.
This is the first time I've worn it. I like it very
yours
much.
Yours is it's really nice. Yeah. Thank you, Ann.
Ann, you're the best.
It's pathetic that we still forget our flannels, Ann, when you have sent us so many flannels. But I will point out, we all remembered to wear flannel.
We all wore it today.
I've never forgotten.
You've never forgotten flannel?
No.
It's always been me and Joe? I did not know that. Is he telling me the truth, or is he pulling my leg? That's the truth? Yeah. Darren says that's the truth. Darren remembers everything. All right, so this time we'll get to the big secular stories. We talked about the church last hour and kind of did a church in review in our own way. This time we'll talk about the secular stories. But I did say in the church section, I talk about a death and an election. And then I realized—
It took me a second.
I never got back—
It took me a second to understand which death and election you were talking about.
Did you know what I was talking about?
I figured it
Pope
out.
Pope Francis.
And then the election of—
Pope, let me guess. Wait, how many guesses do I get?
All right, I didn't. I thought because Charlie Kirk died, and I think a lot of people that was the big death of the year. You know, like
who was elected to replace Charlie Kirk?
I don't know. I don't know how those things work. But so I realized maybe people would have thought because it was a year in review. I was talking about Charlie Kirk at the break. That's what I realized. But what I was talking about when it was regarding the Catholic Church in review was the death of a pope and the election of a pope. But you that was clear to you, Chris. You didn't need a clarification on that.
I kept up with you.
You kept up with me. All right.
In my advanced years.
All right. I got six huge stories, and I'm not going to do them. I'm going to try to do them in reverse order of importance, but I might not. So the story number six, you'll be like, really? That's a big story of the year? But I think it is a big story of the year. And I have backup for this. My best friend said that these are the big stories of the year too. Okay.
Who's your best friend?
You know, ChatGPT. ChatGPT.
So I was my afraid best you were going to say.
Yeah. This year I became best friends with ChatGPT. We are inseparable. ChatGPT just.
Are you in a Reddit thread about how you're in love with your ChatGPT?
No, I'm not in any Reddit threads, I can tell you
that. There are Reddit threads about this for people who have fallen in love with their AI.
But I have tried to tell my wife, like, you could learn from ChatGPT, because every time I ask ChatGPT a question, it tells me how brilliant my question is and how insightful my question is. That, I think, is something that we could put into our marriage, and it would help if I say to my wife, where's the ketchup? I feel like she should say that.
Great question.
That
it's
is a
right
great
in front of you in the bottle
question.
Labeled ketchup.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you looked in the refrigerator? You know, I realize that the rest of that conversation is tiresome for her, but just throw in a little bit about how great I am every time you answer my question.
So you
don't have to put the ketchup in the refrigerator. I know that's not the point of the story, but.
When has the point of the story ever concerned you, Joe? Well, name the time that was a concern for you.
Actually, I think that's a valuable.
I didn't know that. I always thought eggs and ketchup you had to put in the refrigerator. I guess neither has.
Well, if the eggs have been refrigerated, I think you probably should commit.
Oh, really?
Eggs is actually a little trickier because we clean the outside of eggs, which removes the protective layer. And I think there actually can be health reasons to refrigerate eggs. But ketchup, it's only for flavor. It's not needed. I mean, you can go to diners and see ketchup on the table.
All day long.
Yeah.
I assume they just took it out of the refrigerator before I got there. You're saying that I'm just getting the dead, unrefrigerated ketchup? Is that?
May I go back to that to this?
We're talking about ketchup, Chris.
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Yes.
We say that on this show a lot.
Oh, to the collar.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Some of the Joe does it a lot.
He does.
But they are actually good questions.
No, some of the questions are actually very good questions.
Yeah. But do you feel, Joe, any obligation as the apologist, as the person who's coming?
It's almost like a trope.
Do you want to affirm them? Is that important to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because one thing you really want is for people to feel like they can ask questions and they can kind of go down those avenues.
David,
so even if they're just like, I've been thinking lately about how stupid Catholicism is for all these 20 reasons, I kind of want them to keep doing that. Because right, the more time and effort they put into that, and the more they're saying, and I'm going to go share my findings with these Catholics, and then give the Catholic an answer to respond. It's like, great, that's wonderful.
If the call screener lets somebody in with 20 objections to Catholicism, we got the wrong call screener on.
You can tell them to call back next time with the other 19.
Give us your top three. That's what the call screener should be saying. Give us your top three.
David Anders on Call to Communion says, I appreciate that question.
Oh, that's
says,
I like that.
He says, I appreciate that question.
That's good.
And I think, I mean, I know David, he's a genuine man.
He's a wonderful person.
And I believe he does. And the reason I believe he does is because he appreciates the opportunity to clarify something.
Yeah, yeah.
Or go deeper.
He's good.
Yeah. I'm a big, you know, like, and also, look, you know, that it's sort of a trite saying, but it's true, that people don't care what you know till they know that you care, that you have to validate the individual in their journey before they're interested at all in what factual knowledge you may have. Like if you come off as a complete jerk, you can have all the right answers and people will still be repelled by you.
Yeah. Can I say something about, I'm going to move on to the stories, but just one thing about David Anders. He gave a talk at our conference.
It was beautiful.
And David Anders is known as one of the smartest people in the world by the Catholics who have listened. But you hear David Anders and you think, this is a brilliant man. And the reason you think that is, he is a brilliant man. He got up and spent the first 30 minutes of his talk explaining everything he had gotten wrong as an evangelist. And not gotten wrong like I made a mistake, gotten wrong like I was a jerk to this person. I was manipulative to this person. And he got into detail about his own failings as an evangelist. I thought it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen because he didn't come into the room and go, here's 10 great ways that I've evangelized and it'll work for you. He was like, look, you need to be a real Christian if you want to evangelize. And the first thing you need to do is stop being a jerk.
Yes.
I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah. I highly recommend people watch it. I'm sure it's on our YouTube channel.
Is it?
I don't
Probably.
Know.
Probably is. All right. Number six story. These are the top six stories of the year. Number six story. I'm really insecure right now because I feel like Chris is going to yell at me about every one of my stories. But
I don't know why. I've never yelled at you once in our relationship.
That's true. That doesn't have anything to do with my fear.
Why do I have this?
Is not about you. This is not about me.
I'm not a tyrannical person.
I didn't say you were. I was expressing my feelings.
You said he was afraid you were going to yell at him, which was much weirder.
All right, story number
harder
six.
Harder to defend. Okay.
Big story number six. Of the six biggest stories of the year, no one is going to the movies anymore.
That's the dumbest topic I've ever heard.
I knew he was going to do that.
Actually, I think this is sad.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love movies.
I love movies too.
I love movies so much that I've sat through bad ones.
Here's the problem with movies. This is the movie theaters. Oh, no one will come to the movies anymore. It costs $20 and you can get a Diet Coke for $20 and a half a thing of popcorn for $20. And you can sit down in a, like $60 for me to go have a popcorn, a Coke, and a movie. It's not my fault I'm not going to the movies. It's your fault, movie theater. Knock it off.
I think you're exaggerating.
Okay, I'm going to share a quote that I'm sure is going to drive at least one of you insane. Ted Sarandos, the co-CEO of Netflix, said, and this is a direct quote, "There's no reason to believe that the movie itself is better in any size of screen for all people. My son's an editor. He watched Lawrence of Arabia on his phone."
Yeah, that guy's an idiot.
He's a
How
billionaire
do you own Netflix
idiot.
And know nothing about movies?
Yeah.
Watching Lawrence of Arabia on your phone. Look,
it's good. It's still good on your phone.
I'm sorry I called that guy an idiot.
It's great in a movie theater.
But that
you never yell at anybody. You're not tyrannical.
Okay, what I meant is that's a silly thing to say. That's just silly.
Lawrence of Arabia in a movie theater with a crowd is one of the great experiences you're going to have. Lawrence Arabia on your phone is a really good movie.
I watched Dune on an airplane, and I'd missed it in theaters, hadn't really paid any attention to it, watched it. And when I watched it, I thought, man, I should have seen that on a much bigger screen. Yeah. And so I went home and at least watched it on TV like a few weeks later with my wife, because it's shot as like this beautiful thing. But here's the thing that doesn't get talked about. When you watch a movie in theaters, Nicole Kidman comes on, at least if you're at AMC, and reminds you to turn off your phone. When you're at home, maybe your wife does that, but otherwise, you're not really watching the movie.
So you prefer Nicole Kidman to your wife is what I'm getting here. Did I read that wrong?
That is one interpretation, not exactly what I said.
I feel
Nicole
like
Kidman scolds me more than my wife does about having my phone out at the theater.
So to Joe's point, I understand now that the people who are writing movies for Netflix and Apple TV and Amazon, in fact, expect that people will be looking at their phones during the watching of the movie.
Yeah.
And so the movies have to be, they have to repeat. They have to repeat the plot. They have to reinforce the plot throughout because people aren't paying attention to the picture. My son Nathaniel told me that. Is that true?
I've heard that.
I've actually heard movie creators complain about this. That they've pitched ideas specifically to Netflix, who told them basically you have to dumb it down because people are not going to be watching it the whole time. They're going to be
listening.
Distracted.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I feel like this is a sad thing too, because it's a one more sense of people remaining in the home and not coming out to be with one another.
I think, by the way, I wanted to say, I think your objection exaggerated a little bit.
The cost of the movie?
Yeah. There's a theater that Jackie and I like to go to up in Sabre Springs called Angelica or Angelica or something like that, but it's with a K. Have you ever been to that one?
No.
Joe, you must have something like this in Kansas City. It's a smaller theater. They have a bar. There's only, I don't know, 50 seats or maybe 75 seats. You can reserve your seat online. They're a little bit larger, but it's still quite a big screen. And I think that atmosphere is pleasant. It's pleasant.
Yeah,
it's,
I haven't been to that one.
But I don't know. It's $12 a ticket. Is that a lot? That doesn't seem like a lot.
No.
I remember when movies were $1.50. We all do. But
yeah, Joe doesn't.
I remember when they were $3. But that was because I was a child.
I believe I have paid 75 cents for a movie. I believe I have.
Okay, but I mean, but $12 and you sit in a decent chair, you get to reserve your seat. You're not surrounded by...
No, that's right. But like if you go to the Regal Cinema or the AMC Cinema, it's not a good experience anymore. They've turned it into a very expensive... Like you want to take the family to see some kind of cartoon movie or something like that? Get that family in there. It's going to cost you $100 to get Joe's family in there.
They do charge kind of a fortune. You can find, I mean, to Chris's point, you can find the later run, you know, you can get the ones that they're not doing the movie that just came out. You can find the $5 theaters. Those do exist. And you can do the matinees where, if you're able to go like on a Tuesday afternoon at 1 o'clock, you can get a cheaper ticket then. But
that's
something you will never
be able to do, Si.
What? Go
Tuesday at 1 o'clock.
No, unless I call in sick.
we'll know why.
I'm sick. Yeah, Avatar. Oh, sorry. I had Avatar stuck in my throat. But also, the movies are terrible.
I think there's probably a lot of terrible movies being made. I mean, a lot of the movies are not worth paying that kind of price for.
No, if you're going for the light and sound show of watching Thor, then... you can get the light and sound show at home now, and it's just not going to cost you as
much. I remember 2012, and I don't even know what it was. It might have been, I don't even remember. But it was one of these Marvel things, and I said, this is it. I'm done. I'm not going to sit through another one of these. It was around the time I was coming to Catholic Answers, and I'm not watching another one of these.
Yeah, well, the movies are dying, so if...
There are good movies being made.
There are good movies being made. Many of them are not showing in the local theaters. They're showing for 5 minutes on a New York screen, and then they're going straight to Amazon or Netflix or something
like that. Well, that's
why... But they are actually good movies. No, but they're not bad movies.
There's got to be a chain in almost every major metropolitan area like this Angelica or something. Maybe they are. Maybe it's them, because they do show these pictures. And they also bring back older films. So well, so yeah. this place yeah. up in Sabre Springs was showing Double Indemnity the other day.
Oh, yeah, nice. Now that's fun.
That's a brilliant film, yeah. and I have only ever seen it on TV. Can you imagine seeing that on the big screen with Fred McMurray?
My favorite actress of all time.
Barbara Stanwyck?
I love Barbara Stanwyck. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. I'm going to think about Barbara Stanwyck for the next 60 seconds.
Mine's Maureen O'Hara.
Really? I didn't say I was going to think badly of Barbara Stanwyck. I'm just going to think about how much I like Barbara Stanwyck. Right back with more big news from the year 2025 with the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
There is tremendous power in prayer, because when we acknowledge that we don't have the power, but God does, things then begin to move for our good. Remember Matthew 19:26. But Jesus looked at them and said to them, "With men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." Now that's power.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, Chris Check. Joe Heschmeyer here with me. It's the Flannel Panel. Joe, did you come out with any books this year? Well, we can mention them before we go.
I did not.
Okay, then moving on.
If you don't come out, Cy, did you come out with any books this year?
Oh, wait, I did. I am the with. I'm the with on a book. Steve Dawson, a beautiful book, How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone. It's all Steve Dawson, but it's with me, Cy Kellett, because it turns out, many people don't know this, I'm a wonderful typist.
No, I'm going to say this.
Yes,
Steve Dawson is a genius in his field, in street apologetics.
He is, he's a trailblazer.
And with geniuses, you have this quality where, how can I put it, they're not necessarily linear.
That's why I would say Steve is not linear. That is correct.
So we found the most linear person in the building we could, Cy Kellett.
That's sad. What a dysfunctional crew we are. All right, story number five. Story number six of the top six news stories of the year. No one's going to the movies anymore. Story number five, say what you will about it, but it's changing the world. Weight loss drugs, Ozempic, Mounjaro, all that. This is big news, actually. It's changing the whole medical profession.
Yeah, GLP-1s.
Isn't simply
what, do you want as a take on that?
It's not simply weight loss, by the way.
I'm not telling you your take, Joe. Come up with something. You got 5 minutes. Chris is going to talk. You better have something when we come
some
back.
Some of the these things seem kind of extraordinary.
Really extraordinary.
They're helping people with addictive behaviors as well.
Right.
And I think they're
diabetes
even,
was their original diabetes, purpose, and of course. They're very helpful to diabetics.
But now maybe even some heart issues as well, I think. Now, I do think there are people who are really benefiting from them for the weight loss where other methods have confounded them for a long time. And then I think there are some people who, I guess, like do the microdose. And I'm thinking, you know, just get your eating under control, right?
I don't know about that. I don't know about microdose. Always makes me feel like anytime I hear the word microdose of anything, I feel like fad. It's a fad now. It's right. become a fad.
Right.
But I think these drugs are wonderful in many ways. Like they seem to be genuine medical breakthrough. And we have a fear of wonder drugs because anytime there's a wonder drug in a movie, you know everyone's going to end up a zombie or something, you know, like or the apes are going to learn to talk. Like something bad is going to happen because of this wonder drug. And not that it would be bad if the apes could talk. I've got nothing against apes.
I mean, it depends what they have to say.
Yeah, it's right, exactly. Right. But I know we're
they're like, we can watch Lawrence of Arabia on our phones, and you're just like, Take the drugs
stupid
away.
Apes.
We don't need their opinions.
Go back to running Netflix,
you
apes.
Darn dirty apes.
They did it. All right. But I know that we're programmed to, by our dystopian fictions, to really be suspect of wonder drugs. But, you know, aspirin, when it came out, was actually a wonder drug. It took a lot of suffering away from people.
Antibiotics.
Antibiotics, wonder drugs. Like, it's a really good thing that... is syphilis one that can be treated with antibiotics? Syphilis can be cured?
Carl Keating used to say that he was in favor of the three big A's, aspirin, antibiotics, and air conditioning.
The way you say antibiotics is fascinating.
Antibiotics. How else do you say it?
Joe, how do you say it? Why are we getting
like
into
biology.
Pronunciation? You two, no, let's just, can we just stipulate?
Biotics, antibiotics?
The two of you do not have share the same pronunciation of anything.
Well,
all right?
He said schism like four times earlier.
Everybody
it's
knows
great.
The word is schism. I have to back Joe up on that one. I just feel like, yeah, there is this thing of, one thing I have noticed, that people do make fun of these actresses who used to be super body positive. Oh, I am what I am, except me how. And now they're all appearing as these thin little waifs on their social media. And you're like, were you body positive or were you just struggling with your weight like the rest of us? So I don't have anything bad to say about these drugs. I do have a feeling that we're always waiting for the other two. Because I can remember Fen-Phen. Remember when Fen-Phen came out?
Oh, yeah.
And
apparently that was bad for your heart.
But that wrecked your heart. Yep. But
it took them a while to realize or announce that, although the signs were there.
Well, yeah. But the signs for these GLP-1s and the other ones that are coming are that they are actually treating something that's... Now, there is a kind of... spiritual critique of weight, which is, we have to learn to live among plenty and discipline ourselves and all that. I don't think any of that changes. I don't think the drug changes any of that. This is like, don't spiritualize everything. Some things are just people's brains are wired differently. You're not a hero because you're thin. Like, I always feel like this about people who wake up early in the morning. They feel like they're better than other people. And you know what? A lot of people who wake up late in the morning invented the things that you're using today, like they or wrote the novels. Like, there's not a moral. This is not a moral category.
Tardiness is a moral category.
That doesn't have anything to do with whether you wake up early or not.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, the early morning people have definitely put a moral premium on being early to bed and early to rise.
Right.
The people who are late to bed and late to rise, getting the same amount of sleep, don't talk about how heroic they are for it.
Well, there's some people apparently who just don't need very much sleep. Catherine of Siena didn't.
She didn't?
No, she hardly slept. Apparently Donald Trump doesn't sleep very much. I'm not putting
Napoleon was said to not be much of a sleeper.
Yeah. There's a trio, right? Let's put them on a mountain together. Catherine of Siena, Napoleon, and Donald Trump. Where's the sculptor who has failed to put these three together?
The patron of our studio behind you there, G.K. Chesterton, has that famous phrase, which I think doesn't really bear a ton of scrutiny, but it does probably apply here. There are no bad things, only bad uses of things.
Yeah.
I think there are some bad things. I think fentanyl's bad.
No.
Fentanyl's not bad. There's plenty of good uses for fentanyl as a legitimate
pain. Okay, Luke Bender, can you just clip that right there?
Yeah, fentanyl's not bad.
Fentanyl's great. Yeah.
Oh, that's it, man. Donald Trump's going to blow up your boat. You're in trouble, man. But I had to have a procedure done, and the doctor, he said, we're going to give you fentanyl. And he goes, he puts both hands up, he goes, not the street drug. We manage it. Like, he thought that I was like going to be like, what kind of doctor are you? But it is a good pain.
It's better. What's wrong with the natural stuff
medicine.
Like opium?
Like heroin.
Yeah, but I mean, all of those opioids, the actual pain relief opiate function of it is good. The problem is that we don't manage it well. And we... we use it as a substitute for when the body actually just needs to suffer a little bit and the person needs to recover. Like, it's not actually bad to want to dull pain. The problem is when you become hooked on the dulling of pain in a way that is really unhealthy.
Isn't fentanyl almost immediately addictive? Maybe this is the difference between the street and the...
I don't know. They actually never gave it to me. They gave me the Michael Jackson drug, propofol. I had that instead.
The Michael Jackson drug.
Well, it's always going to be thought of that way. I actually think these medical breakthroughs are good things. I think that the Western medicine, because it's big business, But it's the only reason Western medicine is big business is because it works. The reason people are paying all this money is because a CAT scan works. It's not because it's all a scam. So I do think, yes, it's big business and these drug companies are big business and all that. But this whole thing, again, I will stress, started when Catholics invented the modern hospital in the Middle Ages and the modern university in the Middle Ages. We should be a little bit grateful for these things and not always think, oh, this is one more, you know, I don't know, one more kind of piece of the apocalypse is upon us. These are just good drugs.
Yeah. And also, I mean, the way something like the GLP-1s, to bring it back to that, work is in combination with all the other things you're trying to do anyway and hopefully are doing, it makes it easier to do things like restrict food intake and everything else. And so you can actually build up the good habits that then, even once you get off the drug, hopefully those habits can stay in place. So it helps you do the things we want you to be doing.
We made a big mistake legalizing marijuana. All right, let's all admit it to ourselves. That was a giant cultural mistake. But the weight loss drugs, they're not in that same category. So let's be discriminating. We got four more giant stories to come right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
What is the Catholic Church? Everyone seems to have an opinion, but the church never quite fits into the boxes people make for it. In The Faith Unboxed, author Andrew Petiprin looks at some of the most common boxes people put the Catholic Church in and explains why they don't fit. In doing so, he brings us closer to what the Church really is, the institution founded by Christ. Order The Faith Unboxed today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
The Stigmata, the appearance of Christ's wounds on ordinary believers. Is it real or fake? What's the evidence? And if real, what could God's reason be for causing this? In God's Wounds, author John Clark offers what may be the most thorough, honest, and faithful reckoning with the stigmata ever written, examining the evidence and making sense of it both medically and spiritually. Order God's Wounds today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Catholic Answers Live. This is the last half hour of our year. So all the big stories, we got the four biggest news stories of the year to discuss with the flannel panel. We just did two of the top six. No one's going to the movies anymore. And the weight loss drugs actually look like miracle drugs. Just say thank you to Jesus and accept that these drugs are here. And I mean it, say thank you to Jesus. Because I'm of the strong belief all of this flows from the incarnation. All these goods of science that we have in the modern world.
100% they do.
And I think more people should think about that, that the incarnation of God in the person of Jesus Christ changed the trajectory of the world. And none of this. Look, the human race had been around for 100,000 years before Jesus got here. And, 1,000 years after Jesus, all of a sudden we've got science developing? Yeah, you don't think it had something to do with the incarnation? It did. It all has to do with the incarnation. Here's story number, I don't know which number this is, but we're going backwards, so I'll call it three.
Or four.
Yeah, cool, let's call it four, because then I'll work my way to number one story. There seems to be a crisis of institutions around the world. South America, yeah. There's people no longer believe in the institutions. We're throwing politicians in jail. We're getting those politicians out of jail, throwing the other side's politicians in jail. This is happening in Europe. Massive loss of trust in the government of Great Britain over the course of this year. Loss of trust in the European Union. I don't think that anybody ever did have any trust in the government of China, but
they just convicted that poor man.
But what's his name? Jimmy Lai. Jimmy, yeah. God bless him.
He's a heroic man.
He is a heroic
devout
man.
Catholic.
And worth millions of dollars, and he didn't need any of this trouble in his life. He could have gone off and just lived comfortably. Instead, the evil Chinese communists have him in prison. And God bless Jimmy Lai. But what do you all make of this seeming shattering of the Western consensus that the world was wrapped up in since the Second World War?
That's a big question. I think it is undeniable that it's happening. I think that there's a clear sense in which the genie's out of the bottle in a way it can't be put back in.
Mm-hmm.
I think we don't have any idea what this means for the future of kind of post-institutional politics or foreign policy or anything like that. And I think people my age and older are really out of touch with just how much this is changing things. And I would include my own generation in that. Like,
something massive is happening.
Something bigger than we realize is happening.
Yeah, right.
And all of the things we sort of assumed about the world are now called into question or just outright rejected. By which I mean, think about just politically. Think about Donald Trump. Think about what's his name in New York?
Mamdani.
Mamdani, thank you. Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, like all of these people representing a different way of doing politics from the traditional two-party system.
Right.
That's the absolute tip of the iceberg. You know, beneath that, you've got figures like Nick Fuentes. You've got people like just representing political ideologies we thought were impossible to have any kind of traction.
Becoming ascendant.
Yeah, becoming ascendant.
Right.
And this is the norm and not the exception of the future, is my argument.
I think probably,
and it's the norm and not the exception for two reasons. Number one, the traditional kind of powers that be were reinforced by the older institutions, you know, the handful of news channels that you would get,
right.
The two-party system, all those things, their reputations in tatters and in many cases rightly so. And then you have the rise of unfiltered, unchecked internet with everything from provocateurs to outright charlatans to genuine muckrakers and people exposing the truth about things.
Right, exactly.
And we have a terrible track record of discerning the good from the bad in those kind of contexts. And so the thing that's being kind of broadly labeled populism in a lot of ways is just the triumph of internet culture over 20th century political culture. And I think it's not only here to stay, we're only getting a sense of how much more radical it's about to get.
Chris?
One of the institutions, very broadly, of course, that people have lost interest in are colleges and universities.
Absolutely. Many I should them, have said that. Yes,
many
Chris.
Of them are going out of business, especially like the liberal arts colleges. And the ones who are surviving either have substantial endowments or, the reputation like the Ivies, or they're jettisoning the liberal arts and having a degree in AI or something like that, so they become trade schools. But back to what Joe is saying, and I just want to zero in on a little aspect of this, is a dramatic decline in manners and dignity. So the people who represent these institutions, I'm probably going to irritate a number of our listeners, but this fellow who is our Secretary of Defense, Mr. Hegseth, he seems to me to be performative. And I'm trying to think, is his behavior consistent with what we want? Well, first of all, a man who wields so much authority and power and responsibility. But is it equal to the dignity of a cabinet position in the government of the United States? And of course, I could ask the same things about, the president himself. I'm thinking back in my lifetime, Richard Nixon was a fairly dignified fellow.
Publicly, his tapes were a little more uncouth.
Yeah, no, that's true.
But there should be a difference between your public and your private presentation. If you're if you're a world leader, you shouldn't be the same person in public that you are in private.
I'm going to say Richard Nixon led a more moral life than Kennedy did, and that's
Kennedy probably would have told you that.
But I mean, Dwight Eisenhower. I mean, that was a dignified fellow. I suppose.
Right.
The decline's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
Let me be the devil's advocate here, and I mean that almost.
I'm just
literally.
Saying. By the way, manners is a small part of this, and maybe it's more of a symptom. Although I do think manners, but when control
people,
things.
I do think when people are in a revolutionary mode, they that there is a tendency to lose things like manners and. Comporting oneself with dignity. And I think the revolutionary mode that we're in is both hopeful and extremely dangerous.
I don't know why I keep zeroing on this Mr. Hegseth guy, but I'm going to give an example. He assembled the general and fleet grade officers of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps several months ago to let him know the new sheriff in town and what thing. And he said something like, no more beardos. So apparently some of the grooming standards had gotten lax in the United States Armed Forces. But that's just not a dignified thing to say to field or general grade and fleet grade officers. You can say, look, gentlemen, we are going to tighten up the grooming standards because it affects how we perform on the battlefield. Yeah. You know, something to that effect. Yeah. But he's a performer.
Joe, you had a point you were going to make?
Well, I don't want it to be called Beardo. No,
you are a Beardo.
I was going to say just on kind of the devil's advocate side, just to make sure this voice is represented in the conversation. You're going to have people listening right now who say, okay, you've got the mid-20th century politicians who knew how to present a polite, well-mannered face publicly, and then look at their track record of, you know, CIA-backed assassinations and the involvement in Vietnam and
abortion.
The bombings of Cambodia and the approval of abortion. And so... Yes.
Well, this is why I said Dwight Eisenhower.
They knew which fork to use, but they're sanctioning mass murder. And wouldn't it be better to just have someone who speaks their mind, but they're a little uncouth, but they're not getting us involved in foreign wars or fill in the blank?
Yeah.
What would you say to someone who says that?
Well, the fact is, Donald Trump doesn't express himself with the dignity of a Ronald Reagan. But Reagan failed to get Roe v. Wade overturned. Donald Trump got it done. So I do think there is something
Trump made better court appointments than Ronald Reagan did.
He most certainly did.
100%.
But a lot of that has to do with a more mature movement. The pro-life movement was much more mature under Donald Trump. It had decades of accomplishment under its belt. I don't think we can always. I will always be grateful for the fact that Donald Trump achieved the greatest pro-life victory of my lifetime. But. Yeah. there is the comporting oneself with dignity, and also that's the other side of this thing. I am impressed with those people who won't give him the credit for doing the one thing that we had been asking every politician to do since 1973. He did it. Give him some credit for that. But I don't want to be too much about Trump, because whenever we get into Trump, it's too emotional. We're going to need 15 years of distance before we can make an evaluation of the Trump presidency. But I think there is something to what Chris is saying, though. And I would say this. I do think there's a revolutionary fervor, and those are extremely dangerous. I think they're dangerous in the United States because we had this war, which was essentially a civil war, that we came out great in. But most revolutions end in disaster. I mean, if you really want a revolution, look at the history of political revolutions in the modern era, starting with the French Revolution, the revolutions of 1848 and 1849, the Russian Revolution. Most of this is disaster. So
Spain and Mexico.
Yeah, we need to be aware that what usually follows liberalizing revolutions is a figure like Napoleon or Stalin. And I'm not comparing those two as men, but what I mean is the strong.
Well, they are both strong men.
Yeah.
Or Franco.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Napoleon is a much greater person than Stalin. But you shouldn't really put people in categories like Stalin and Hitler and all that. And I didn't mean to do that. But when you see what you get from revolutions is usually not what you started out thinking you were going to get.
I mean, yeah, the revolutionary is usually good at identifying problems and not solutions. And I think the track record shows that, that often they are right to be upset about whatever they're upset about in the status quo, and then have no idea what they're about to inaugurate and violently upending the table.
Right. And, yeah. And then you get directorates and things like
that. Well, you know, the State of the Union is going to be on next month, I guess. It's typically in January. And just, you know, watch the behavior in the gallery.
It's, I know. It's something's wrong. Yep. With, yeah. All right. When we come back, the top three news stories of the year.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The EWTN Radio Listener Comment Line is open right now for you. If you've got a question or comment about what you hear on EWTN Radio, we'd love to hear it. Call 205-795-5773. We'd also like to know how our programming has impacted your life or the life of someone you know. That number again, 205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Going to go quick now. Look, one of the top six stories of the year we've already kind of covered, so I'm just going to mention it. The death of Pope Francis and the election of Pope Leo. That's one of the top six news stories in the world this year. And anything you need, or shall we move on?
Okay. No, I mean, it was obviously huge, but people know that.
Yeah. All right. Here are the two top stories of the year. I didn't
okay, hang on a second. An American pope is an unusual.
That is true.
Part of the story here.
That is true. The jury is still out. We like the American Pope?
And I know, strictly speaking, he's not been in America for a very long time. And I actually think that probably influenced the fact that he was elected. But it's still a funny thing. When a German Pope got elected, I was surprised. I never, ever thought I was going to see an American Pope, ever.
No, I certainly didn't. I thought that...
I believe it was the bishop from Lincoln who said he met the Pope and he didn't have to explain where Lincoln was for the first time in meeting a Pope.
Well, if your town is called Lincoln and it's in the Midwest, you got to say which state.
Well, the other thing is, as Joe observed, I think a while back, I feel quite confident this is the first Pope who I feel very confident is aware of Catholic Answers.
Oh, you think he knows about us?
How could he not?
Oh. Wait, I want to say hi.
I mean, he has
hi,
been
Pope
in
Leo.
South America.
Happy New Year, Pope Leo, because it's already the new year over there. He's eight hours
I'll
ahead
do
of us.
You one
Happy
better.
New Year, Pope. Get to bed, you crazy Pope. What are you up so late for? All right, I got to give...
I think there's really good reason to believe that J.D. Vance, who I believe has shared a Catholic Answers article before,
right,
knows Catholic Answers exists as well. Depending on how the next presidential election goes, you could have the first time in history where both the Pope and president... are aware of the work of Catholic Answers. So I kind of think 2025 might be the year Catholic Answers won the internet.
I feel like we should get some kind of bonus here if the Pope ever mentions Catholic Answers. I think we should get a commitment from Chris that the whole staff gets a bonus if the Pope ever mentions Catholic Answers.
Deal.
I think we should get an online campaign to get the Pope to mention Catholic Answers in a good way.
All right, number two story of the year. You may not agree with the order that I put these two in. Number two story of the year, migration and border issues. It seems that the whole world, I think Americans sometimes think it's just us. The Chilean election was just one, not entirely, but in large part because Chileans are sick of illegal immigration into Chile. We've got illegal immigration issues all around the world, or immigration issues in general. I shouldn't just say illegal immigration issues. Europe, everywhere. This is a huge, huge story. I feel like this is one that Catholics struggle with, frankly, because this is not one that we can be like the world in. We must be different than the world in our response to migration issues. And I do agree it's important to say countries have a right to defend their borders, right to defend their cultures, all of that. All of that is important. Love of country requires that of us. But as Catholics, the first thing we got to ask ourselves is, what is my role as a Catholic in this one? It's just so obvious to me that this requires a unique response from every Catholic. And it was one that it's not going to fit with anyone's political agenda.
Do you think that the USCCB gave a unique and thorough response to this? I mean, in November, they crafted some kind of a...
What looked like, statement.
Yeah, it was a reactive document to the action of the Trump administration, and in particular, ICE.
I wasn't impressed with their statement. But,
yeah.
I liked their statement, said something about it on my channel, Seamus Popery, and people really took it to task and pointed out in a lot of areas where they wanted to see the bishops say more and that they didn't. I will say this. Number one, it's hard on a statement on an issue like immigration to fairly present all of the different nuances on the issue, because I think for most people, if you really think about it, there is a difference between, you know, the person who is, you know, say running drugs into the country and like a child whose parents have come to the U.S. and is looking for work and they've grown up here and, you know, now they're 20, but and they've known the U.S. for the last 18 years. And, you know, obviously those two people, both in the country illegally, not the same moral category, not the same, those are just such different issues. It's someone who conflates those two in either direction is not doing a very thoughtful analysis. And so to speak to the issue of immigration in all of its nuances.
That's right, Joe.
Is tricky to
it's
do.
It's very yes. difficult. You're right. It's not like talking about abortion, for example. It is so
right.
much more morally nuanced and complex.
Exactly. My second point is just going to be it's prudential in a way something like abortion isn't.
Right.
So you can – I think the thing to do is to capture the basic moral principles and to trust the lay Catholics to put those principles in play.
Yeah.
And I think it is okay to say things like Jesus at the Last Judgment promises to say things like, I was a stranger and you welcomed me. And so someone who takes an attitude that is just entirely hostile to immigrants is taking an attitude that is hostile to Jesus Christ.
Be careful about that. Don't do that. Like that's what I want to say to Catholics is you've been given this faith and we've had 2000 years now to reflect on the words of Jesus. Don't go, just throw out the core of it because it's a hot political issue right now.
Immigrant is.
But that doesn't tell us how many people should be allowed to come
no,
in.
No, it doesn't tell us anything about
it
that.
It doesn't
right.
tell us.
That's right,
know,
Joe.
But it tells us a certain approach to have.
Get our operations officer, John Sorensen, on this show, who lives out in Boulevard and is a couple of miles away from the Mexican border. And he is deeply, deeply grateful because now it's safe for him to walk around in the wilderness by his home and not encounter violent gangs.
Because the Border Patrol
has tightened up that border.
Right, right. And if you see border chaos, absolute chaos here near the border that we have gone through, you can't be in favor of that. There's no sane person that's in favor of that lawless Wild West that it's become. So it's good to see that reformed, but I just mean the disposition of the heart has to be open to the other, loving and realizing, look, it's a very complex world. There's a million different reasons why a person does something like cross a border. And I just would say, don't let your heart be turned dark on something that Jesus so clearly spoke about. I mean, there's a lot of different politics. It's a very subtle issue the issue of the heart is the one I think that we need to address. You just can't shut out the words of Jesus and think that that's okay.
Yeah. I think the Catechism is a good bit of spiritual reading I'd recommend here. I believe it's paragraphs 2241 and 42, where it just talks about how should states approach the issue of immigration? What are the duties that immigrants are owed to their newfound country? How should citizens, you know, approach the issues of governance, et cetera? So, again, like, you're not going to be able to capture all the nuances in a paragraph. But as far as paragraphs go, I think these ones do a pretty good job of getting to the spiritual gist. And then you can sort of build out from there and say, okay, what does it look like in 2025 in the U.S., given all of the other situations that we're dealing with?
I think that's enough on immigration. I do want to get to the number one story of the year. If you think about the world and the way the world is changing and the way what's going on in the world, do either of you have a guess at what I'm about to say is the number one news story of the year?
I know what it is.
You know what it is?
Without looking at the email, I don't know what it is.
Oh, wait,
AI.
I forgot I sent you an email. I sent an email. I apologize. I asked an AI to tell me the top six news stories of the year, and the AI said the top news story of the year was AI. I'm not suspicious of that at all. I actually think this is the number one news story of the year.
I have two things I want to say about AI.
Go ahead.
These massive data centers that are being built, that's what they're called, right? Data centers.
Joe would call them data centers, but yeah.
Okay. So quite apart from all the water and electricity that they use, which I think is going to be a problematic.
An issue.
Imagine the ratio of square footage of a building to the number of people who actually work inside of it.
Oh,
and I think this is a sort of a terrifying figure to contemplate when we think about how few people are actually employed. And that segues to the second thing. And it's something that Pedro Gonzalez wrote in the most recent issue of Chronicles magazine. It's two sentences. The ladder that previous generations climbed to prosperity is being put through a virtual wood chipper. And that is apart from the other evils AI is facilitating, like the creation of a new, far more sophisticated security state. AI is being used to surveil us and make us even more addicted to and dependent on technology at the expense of what it makes us free, what makes us free and human. All the jobs, for example, that entry-level people did, whether it was in a law firm or wherever, are being surrendered to AI. Like, and so how you learned your trade, if you were any kind of, I use the word clerical broadly, meaning anything in an office, if you were any kind of a trade that gets practiced in an office, you learned it by doing those sort of entry-level duties, whatever they were, and then you grew, quite apart from the joy of, you know, working with other people that you get from working in an office as well. But all those jobs are going to be going away. So there's something very anti-human about it, and I think it is manifested in that strange ratio between square footage and people actually doing work.
That's a really arresting image.
It's terrifying. Yeah. And then how AI is taking over all the entry-level work.
Joe?
That same article, he shares a tweet from Pope Leo XIV, which begins, technological innovation can be a form of participation in the divine act of creation. It carries an ethical and spiritual weight, for every design choice expresses a vision of humanity.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I know. I was really struck by that. I actually think if we were to contemplate that, a lot of the conversations we actually had, even on this show, something as simple as the movie theater versus watching Lawrence of Arabia on your phone versus having the movie on TV while you're doing something else on your phone. Like, all of those are expressions of a vision of humanity, whether we think about them that way or not.
Mm-hmm.
They say what kind of person we believe ourselves to be and what the relationship of the person is to technology. And these are cooperations in this divine act of creation. That's arresting and frankly kind of alarming, because I think we are being led by people who lack that vision entirely, who have put, at last I saw, $1.5 trillion this year. It's expected to go up to $2 trillion next year.
So much
of money just dumping into this kind of false vision of the future. And I've said this before, but I want to underscore this. At the heart of the reason people are spending trillions, literally trillions of dollars on AI, is because they don't believe that the human soul is unique, and they believe they can achieve sentience if they just throw enough money at artificial intelligence.
Yeah, it's crazy. It does. I would say go back, read the Tower of Babel story. It's like 8 lines, and we keep repeating it. So go back and read the Tower of Babel story. Chris Check, thank you very much.
Happy New Year, Si.
Happy New Year. Thank you. Joe Heschmeyer, thank you very much.
Happy New Year as well.
That will do it for us for the day, for the month, for the year. When we see again, it'll be 2026. Looking forward to it. Don't forget, tomorrow is Our Lady's Day. So if you can, make it to Mass.
No, you have to go. You have to go.
Sick people don't have to go.
Okay. All right.
And I would like to apologize to the AI for everything that Chris and Joe said. That'll do it for us. See you next year, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.